AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon. And on this Tuesday, as usual, we're joined by Patrick Koulikan. He is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer, great resource for the latest in Minnesota news and politics over at minnesotareformer.com. As today, we'll be talking about the legislature inadvertently legalizing weed, as well as some accusations in St. Paul of landlords trying to skirt rent control rules. Patrick, thanks so much for joining me on the show today. Good to have you on.
Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. So let's start off talking about what happened at the state legislature this past session, because something not a lot of people were expecting occurred. That would be the legalization of marijuana, at least in the form of 5-milligram increments of edibles and drinks. So that was very surprising, again, given the political landscape and the fact that the Republican-controlled Senate didn't seem likely to pass anything like this, but it sort of made its way through inadvertently, unbeknownst to Republicans. So can you walk us through exactly what happened? Because it sounded like originally the Republicans just thought they were trying to clean up a gray market on an area called Delta 8, correct?
That's right. Around the state, we've seen the proliferation of this product. It's called Delta 8. It's sort of a cousin of the more well-known Delta 9 THC, which is the kind of thing that you would buy in a legal state, in edible form. This had become kind of a problem because it is intoxicating, this Delta 8, and it's unregulated. So they're able to give it in all kinds of quantities, no rules about packaging or age or anything like that. And so they hope to clean this up with some language. But I think someone on the DFL side, who's in favor of a broader marijuana legalization, saw an opportunity late in the legislative session when a lot of things can happen without everybody kind of understanding the details. What they did was they introduced all these regulations regarding cannabinoids. And as it happens, of course, THC 9, and they meant to regulate Delta 8, and they wound up encompassing all cannabinoids, and that includes Delta 9 THC, which is kind of the more conventional one. And so now there are these rules in place for how you can sell legal THC, and that is as good as a green light as far as retailers. By hook or by crook, we wound up with legal THC as of Friday. It's pretty clear that Republicans didn't quite understand what was going on here. They've admitted as much. Senate Majority Leader Jeremy Miller at first had no comment on the thing. And then Friday afternoon, late Friday before holiday weekend, he came out kind of in favor of this, what he called bipartisan legislation. So it's like, well, horse out of the barn. We're going to take credit for this. And then sure enough, there were the retailers were ready for this. If most of Minnesota didn't realize that this was happening or coming, there's definitely some people in the industry who knew because, you saw photos on social media on Friday of long lines of people, looking to buy their legal THC.
Yeah, I guess the lesson is make sure you read your bills if you're Republicans or even Democrats, because every once in a while, yeah, some language can get in there that you're not aware of. We've seen that in the past and certainly happened during this session with weed being inadvertently legalized. So who's going to regulate this market now? Because as you wrote about in your column there are some questions in terms of how this is going to be regulated.
Yeah, I mean, the issue is, like, is this food, in which case it's Department of Agriculture, but the statute specifically says it's not food, and the Department of Agriculture, they're involved because they're regulating the legal sale of hemp, which is the product that the THC is derived from. But the Department of Agriculture, I don't think, wanted to get involved in THC regulations. This is nothing like what they do, so it wound up at the Board of Pharmacy. But it's not really what they do either. They regulate licensed pharmacies and pharmacists, but there's no licensure requirement here. So anybody can sell this. And so the Board of Pharmacy is now regulating this product, the potency, the packaging, the age requirement. They don't really have any experience with some of those things. And they also only have 23 employees at the moment. And I think, they're mostly pharmacists. Their auditors or their examiners are pharmacists who are used to regulating pharmacies and pharmaceutical products. And so it's unclear, really. Well, actually, it's quite clear that they don't have the resources to do this. The executive director of the Board of Pharmacy told me that. That they're just going to have to do the best they can. So there's definitely some real problems, I would say, with this regulatory structure they've set up, which is very skeletal, and it's quite kind of a Wild West atmosphere, I think, in this new emerging market.
Yeah, at least until the legislature gets back in session. It could be an interesting year or so where we have very lax regulations right now because, as you pointed out, the Board of Pharmacy very short-staffed and they don't have a lot of experience with this. And largely now it sounds like you can sell these things or sell these types of edibles really at just about any type of establishment, whether it's like at a movie theater or a gas station and so forth. So, yeah, this next year could be kind of interesting. But you also raise, I think, an interesting point in your column where you could have opponents of this type of legislation take advantage of the lax regulation around election time and find one example of someone who maybe left their pack of edibles open. A small child was able to ingest these, and of course, ends up in the AR. So this could end up being something that that could be a very big political issue this fall, especially if opponents do take advantage of some sorts of incidents that might take place.
Yeah, I mean, I have concerns because I actually favor the broader policy of legalizing, regulating, and taxing. And the problem is, without a good regulatory regime in place, it could create some kind of excesses, like you said. People, I mean, technically, you could sell this at toy stores. I mean, I don't think anybody would, but there's just all kinds of dangerous allowances in the law, and as a result, we could see, the usual kind of TV news scare stories. And in fact, I'm almost certain we're going to as soon as this week. Who knows? And that could build momentum against the new policy. So I think that I'm happy about the legalized part, but I'm really kind of not pleased with what they've done on the regulation and tax side. And we could talk about the tax issue, but for now, there's no tax. There's no special tax anyway. People just pay a sales tax. And if you're familiar with the legal regimes in other states, there's significant taxes, and you use that money to help mitigate some of the problems that result from the legalization. And as for now, it's you can just sell it, and you're only going to pay sales tax, and the consumer's going to pay that.
And that's where I wanted to go next, talking about the taxation on this. And you said basically there is no special tax, it's just sales tax that you have to pay. Have there been any talk among the legislatures in St. Paul in terms of how they want this to be taxed, or is this largely going to be the first year where you can get your edibles relatively cheap compared to other states simply because we don't have the same amount of tax that other states do?
Yeah, I mean, the House Democrats actually passed a bill last year that had significant tax provision, and every other state has significant special taxes on this product, and for good reason. I mean, just like alcohol and tobacco, there's social cost to this product, and you ought to be paying to help mitigate those social costs. So yeah, I mean, it's the only upside of that, to the fact that there's such a low tax regime at the moment, is that it might really put a real serious dent in the black market. This has been a problem in other states that have legalized, where they have such extraordinarily high taxes that people can't make any money doing it, and so they revert to the black market, which is very hard to. It then becomes difficult to investigate, because now you've created this legal regime, and it's like, well, why are, then you're going to spend law enforcement resources on the black marijuana black market. And so by having almost no tax and making the product relatively inexpensive, but also allowing for the manufacturers, distributors, and retailers to make a fair amount of money on this, you may really really put a hurting on the black market for marijuana. I mean, who's at this point, you know, who wants to go to some shady guy, mm-hmm. you know, in a parking lot and get a $50 bag of marijuana when they can do it legally at you know, some store that they have some trust in. And you know, if you wipe out the demand for that that shady $50 buy, certainly there's probably some social good to that.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at that, and I'm sure you're right that, yeah, if it's going to be kind of matching the prices that you could get on the black market, well, why go on there when you can just buy it legally? Well, you can read more about that over at MinnesotaReformer.com, including Patrick's column and thoughts on the legislature inadvertently legalizing marijuana, over again at MinnesotaReformer.com. Also want to briefly touch on another piece that is in the Reformer for today, titled, Tenants Say Landlords Are Skirting St. Paul Rent Control with New Utility Charges. As some St. Paul landlords facing soaring inflation and energy costs are trying to get around the city's new rent control law by charging tenants for utilities that used to be included in the rent, some hikes have been as high as 10%, despite the fact that the city does have a 3% cap on rent increases. So tell us a little bit about how landlords are justifying this move and kind of getting around this rule that they can't raise rent by as much as 3%. What's going on in St. Paul right now?
Well, the context here is that the voters, group of voters wrote, and then the voters of St. Paul passed this ordinance that placed a 3% cap on rent increases. It passed at maybe the worst possible time because inflation is at 40-year highs. And so landlords are facing those same inflationary pressures and also really steep increases in energy costs. So they're faced with this hard cap, but they see increasing costs. And not surprisingly, they're trying to get around the regulation by any way they can. And one way they've come up with is that traditionally, if the rent had included utilities, now they're saying, well, no, now you got to pay extra. And so this has allowed them to increase rent beyond just the 3%. I mean, you had to kind of expect this when you enact a program or enact a law like this with this hard cap, that with so many tens of thousands of rental units in the city, that people are going to try to get around the regulation. And so I think there's going to be a little bit of a whack-a-mole when it comes to the city trying to clamp down on these kinds of maneuvers. The city says that is not a legal workaround of the rent control cap. But this one's like, how do they enforce it? Because they don't really have enough staff to enforce it. So it's going to be a difficult situation, I think, to enforce that rent control cap. Interesting to see how it will play out.
Yeah, as you were talking about, this could be the first of many legal fights that we're going to have, given that, at least in this case, the ordinance does not explicitly mention utilities. So it could be the case, too, or I want your thoughts on this, where maybe it's got to also work its way through the court system, where someone has to file a lawsuit and say, hey, well, my rent was increased by 10%, even though there's this cap of 3%, and we don't think that landlord should be able to use utilities to try to justify this. I imagine that could be the case too in St. Paul, where they also need this to kind of work its way through the court system and also get the city involved too.
Yeah. And the city and housing groups will probably have to help out on this, because if you think about an individual renter, you know, his rent goes up, I mean, $100 a month due to one of these utility maneuvers. To that individual renter, has a lot of money, and maybe even make them more likely to be homeless. But it's not enough money to make a lawsuit justified. So that's where you're going to have help from the city and some of the housing advocacy groups. The other thing I would say is that I think in the regulation right now, it says that a landlord is guaranteed a reasonable rate of return, And all they have to do is file some paperwork on that, and they can raise the rent more than 3%, I think up to 8%. But and that's they don't check that unless they're audited. So I think that's probably going to be this. Once landlords maybe realize that's definitely the safer route for them to take. And I think given inflation, that's something, and also the rising rents in the rest of the nation and here in the Twin Cities metro market, I think that's probably more reasonable, a smarter route to take for the landlords, and maybe is will where we'll be wind up with a kind of compromise solution here.
You can read more about Max Nesterak's article on tenants saying landlords are skirting St. Paul rent control with new utility charges over at MinnesotaReformer.com. Read about that as well as marijuana legalization, at least in the forms of edibles and drinks, again, over at MinnesotaReformer.com. We have been speaking with Patrick Houlihan, the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. As always, Patrick, thanks for joining me on the show today.
Always a pleasure.
All right, let's take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil on AM 950.